Hello. So glad you could join us for the Embody Life Summit, Infinite Waves of Health and Creativity, a speaker series with Somatic Visionaries. Today we have the pleasure of talking with Jamie McHugh, whose topic is Embodying Nature, Becoming Ourselves. I'm Terry Carter, your host and the creator of this virtual Somatic series. Somatic coach and artist Jamie McHugh has been guiding somatic expressive encounters with the natural world for over 25 years. Today, he will talk about embodying and expressing elements of the landscape as witness, contact, mirror, respond, rest, and how it also informs his somatic practice and his fine art photography. So, welcome, Jamie.
Hi, Terry. A pleasure to be here again.
I'm wondering if you might share some of the source elements you draw from in your somatic expression system, the people, the theories, approaches, etc.
Sure. In 1986, I came out to California after 8 years of working as an artist in residence in public schools, doing creative drama and dance in a variety of communities, which was very inspiring and informative and really helped me start generating my own approach to dance, especially in realizing that kids are movement and just incredible movers, and how could I help shape their awareness of what they were doing and bring them into interaction with each other and their environment. But I was at a certain point, I was drawn to come out to California in 86 to study with Anna Halperin because I had heard so much about her work with large groups of people, and my work was little by little moving into really including communities in events that were happening at the school. So kind of bridging the school community gap. And I've been very influenced a couple of years earlier by one of the last workshops that Irmgard Bartenev gave at the University of Wisconsin. And we did movement choirs. And I loved movement choirs and this whole idea that you could really expand the dance in communities by involving lots of people with very simple movement phrases. So I came out here to work with Anna, and we came to Sea Ranch because Sea Ranch is an environment where she has a house, and her husband, Lawrence Halperin, was the landscape architect for Sea Ranch. And we spent the first month of the training here in the environment. And it was amazing. And for the 6 years after that experience, I continued to assist her for that month of the training here at Sea Ranch. So I had quite a bit of immersion in her principles and practices of interfacing with the environment. So that creative foundation, I'd really say that my work with her really was like the skeleton of how I worked with this idea of how you introduce people to material, give them time for exploration, channel it through different modalities, whether it's drawing, writing, performance, dialogue, and that continually drawing out what we call the life art bridge. How is what you connect with in your explorations related to your life? And there was one particular year when Anna kind of just went into a very minimalist approach. It was almost very zen in a way that we didn't so much deal with personal themes in relationship to the environment, but more worked with almost a pure sensory experience. And that really impacted me strongly because I realized that it touched something in me that was very related to my experience of being in the wilderness alone or my experience of meditation. And it was very zen in a way of how do you contact, explore, and respond to the environment, you know, without story? In a way, almost kind of going from what I'd call from a humanistic psychology bent to a more transpersonal psychology, a more transpersonal sense. And that really spoke to me very deeply. It was even taking it was almost very Jungian in a way that the environment became the source of preconscious experience that allowed really the elements, the place, the beings of the place to speak more clearly. And over the years, as I kept developing this work, and with influences, of course, from Bonnie Bainbridge Cohen and Emily Conrad, and kept filling out this approach, coming into contact with early developmental movement in that context really made that work stick with me. I really got it on a very different level. Because, you know, I could do homologous rocking for a very long time with that multi-sensory experience happening all around me. And that is one of the, for me, great beauties of working in the natural environment, which is truly absorbing what I would call the medicine of diversity, and the diversity of, in every natural landscape, there is a community of various elements that are synergistically contributing to that place. So, for example, like I was just talking about being in the sand. So there is the sensory contact of the sand on my body. There is the space of the sky. There is the sound of the ocean. There is the feel of the wind. All of those inputs into my body, you know, create a very rich somatic experience. So Bonnie's developmental movement, but also the body systems work. I always say, if I was to kind of summarize the body systems work, it's very simply as every movement quality is the expression of a particular body system and a unique state of mind. And I would say, just like that's true in the inner landscape, that's also true in the outer landscape. The mind of rock is very different than the mind of ocean, than the mind of sand, of sky, etc. So finding that bridge between the inner and the outer landscape, really tuning into the larger body, my larger body of the planet, is what really kind of inspired me to keep going further and further pursuing this aspect of my work.
So the process of spending time in nature and embodying yourself and embodying the environment, that's a medicine of diversity for us. And, you know, it makes me think it's probably, and I'm sure you've thought of this, medicine for the environment as well. And maybe you'll get into that later, but it's just such a beautiful process that you're describing that just makes me so happy to think that it helps us, but it really does also. The earth feels someone listening to it, you know,
right.
At a really deep level. So,
right. Mm-hmm. Well, just to dovetail on that, here's the thing that I think is always really interesting. As human beings, we are part and product of the planet. We would not exist in these bodies without this planet. I mean, we are inseparable. I mean, Thich Nhat Hanh uses that wonderful phrase, interbeing, you know, and that we all influence and are influenced by each other, but also by our environment. And yes, I do think that when we are plugged in, so to speak, with where we are, that we are contributing to the diversity of that environment as well. So I'm really glad you highlighted that. Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. Well, what would you say is the importance of embodying nature to you and others in our world? Is it along the lines of what we were just speaking about, or could you expound on that?
Well, I mean, a variety of things. I mean, for me, so I'll just start with one of my favorite kind of distinctions in the French language between the word voir and regarder. Voir is to see. Regarder is to look at. And my great fear is that little by little, the natural landscape, the natural world starts to become backdrop for kind of our lives, right? That it's something we just look at, regarder, you know, it's just there. And because the overactive prefrontal cortex is just so consumed with its own busyness, the monkey mind, and that we forget that we are creating a membrane of separation between ourselves and this incredible planet, and that, you know, as more and more of us become urbanized and kind of really leave kind of the source of our vitality and the old ways diminish more and more and more, we're not only losing connection, but we're also losing consciousness. That the impact of the natural environment on our consciousness, especially when we allow it to permeate us, is a very strong anchor and a very strong connection to what I would call the numinous. That in wilderness, in wildness, is states of mind and being, and it's very connected to our spiritual wholeness. Constance remembering and reminding to participate actively as well as witness compassionately the environment is such important soul food, especially as we continue to deal with the epidemics of stress, depression, anxiety, despair. Right? Because you can get so plugged in to the larger body politic of what's happening in the world. And it's a real buzzkill, let's face it. I mean, it's, you know, there's sources of inspiration are diminished by what I would call the global mind meld of the internet and the constant information that begins to kind of suck the joy out of life. But beyond that, I'm always come back to a quote of Wendell Berry's, who's one of my great American folk heroes and just a brilliant, brilliant writer, and who's, you know, lived on the land for so long. And one of the things he said years ago that really struck me is that people will exploit that which they merely find to be of value, but they will defend what they love. And I've realized over the years, with all the gloom and doom that we're constantly kind of presented with in terms of the natural environment and how dispiriting that can be, that for me, it's really important to inspire in people their love for place. And how do we stimulate love? Love is really a somatic sensation. Love is a visceral feeling. And how can we really love not only our bodies, which are profound and beautiful and wise landscape, but how can we also love our larger body of the planet. And so I think in terms of as we grapple more and more with these issues facing us, that we realize that, yes, I love this planet and I am willing to defend it. I am willing to defend it.
That's pretty powerful. And I agree that somatic movement, somatic embodiment really does encapsulate the capacity to love, to relate to not only ourselves, but our world and our universe. And, you know, as you're talking about conscious embodiment and its relationship to nature, our relationship to nature, you've also taken that and applied it to, let's just say, art. Or your photography is, if those of you who have not seen it, I really recommend that you do. And Jamie, what is your photography website?
It's naturebeingart.org. And I called it Nature Being Art because I realized in and of itself, nature is art if we have the eyes to see it. So, and I love the kind of the combination of the words, nature being art, nature being art. But yes, yeah. I would say I that. So. Yeah.
Could you explain to us how you experienced this conscious embodiment in relationship to nature and bring it into place with your photography?
A daily practice. I'd say my daily movement class is going out into the environment the last hour of light, maybe sometimes even longer, but generally the last hour before the sun sets, partly because I just love that time of day, the quality of light, the change, and, you know, remembering from many years ago, reading the Don Juan Carlos Castaneda books, how Don Juan said, twilight is the crack between the worlds. And I really feel that kind of witnessing that last hour before the sun sets and the time afterwards, there is a whole remarkable discernible shift in the environment. But participating with that change, my practice of working with what I call these five somatic technologies, breath, vocalization, contact, movement, and stillness, that it would take me into this relationship with place. And I was always aware it was like this, these wonderful kind of what I'd call transient choreographies, right, that would just occur. And that what, as I began to photograph more and more at that time of day, when I was really, you know, starting to kickstart Nature Being Art in 2006, after, you know, many years of photographing sporadically, but really just digging in at that point in my life, that the camera was almost, in a sense, the documenter of that state of mind and relationship. And that I realized that when I brought the two together with the camera, it was the focusing in and examining and staying with and getting very still and going deeper and deeper into getting a particular moment. And then when I was done with that exploration, I would put the camera down on the rock and be still again, or move, or just open myself to the sounds of the ocean, et cetera, et cetera. So this convergent process of photographing and then the divergence of, once again, being informed by place and my body, became this lovely rhythm back and forth. And was just has become like a really beautiful process for me of really tuning in and then dreaming, right? Really tuning in, dreaming. So that's really where the photographic work comes from. And I remember quite a few years ago being in Germany and one of my former students saying to me, she said, when I saw your photographs, I totally realized, you know, oh, this is the same as your movement work. And I said, well, what do you mean by that? And she said, well, I always remember, you know, when you were teaching Anna's movement ritual and the way that you were teaching, you were always kind of inviting us just to fall into our bodies. And she said, when I look at your images, she said, I just kind of fall into them. I'm there in that place and that state of mind. And it was like, so it was a very lovely feedback, is because I've always felt that there is a connection. Sometimes it's hard pressed for me to articulate what that connection is between the art and the movement.
Well, for myself, I'm with your photography, I really do feel deeply the movement that's happening moment. And I appreciate you, you know, saying it's a documentation of an experience. And it really, I agree, it really is very clearly that. And, you know, when we go into these places of deeply connecting with ourselves and in nature, connecting with nature, you know, especially in the conscious embodied way, it takes a lot of shedding of cultural norms, let's just say.
So we
tend to really come into the moment, and it's about us and our environment and healing and innovation. But, you know, what would you say? I'm curious. There's the naysayers out there who might say, you know, doing this somatic embodiment work is self-indulgent, whether it's, you know, for artistic purposes with photography or whatever. And in terms of nature, you know, it's nature struggling, and this self-embodiment, isn't it just self-indulgent? Is it really helpful?
Well, you know, I mean, as you're asking that question, and I forget which Republican candidate mentioned, I think it was Marco Rubio basically saying, you know, we need more plumbers than philosophers. And I was really struck by that, that, okay, I agree there is the need for technically skilled people in the world. But if techne kind of overrules psyche, what is the deal we've made with the devil? I mean, if you think about it, it is the humanistic values of art, of creation, of philosophy that have moved us forward. Yeah, I mean, sometimes in ways that have been contraindicated for the culture, like, you know, the mind-body split. But in other ways, you know, as we now have more and more of us kind of on the bandwagon of really bringing forward the value of body wisdom, the value of the divine feminine, the value of the belly being in equal partnership with the brain, that we are, in a sense, creating a through line for culture to follow. And I would say now that there's a critical mass of so many of us in so many different somatic disciplines, now is the time that it's important to bridge what we do with the larger culture, because quite honestly, without that interface, you know, we're in deep doo-doo. We're in deep doo-doo if we become more and more estranged from not only our bodily wisdom, but all that goes with it, our sense of empathy, our values of altruism and compassion, that those really are embedded in our somatic experience. So, yes, it, like anything else, it can be self-indulgent. And that, for me, is the importance of the bridge between I have an inner experience and how do I bridge that with being out in the world? How do I marry the two together? And for me, the work in the natural environment is such a wonderful way to explore that and understand that. And it's part of the reason why I love, you know, offering these retreats where people come into the natural environment and spend some time being in their body, being with group, being in the environment to replenish and regenerate. Step one, we settle in ourselves. And very often my work takes a very predictable approach, which is, as particularly on these embodying nature retreats, that the morning, you know, is dedicated to coming into contact with ourselves using self-contact, breath, different expressions of the breath, sound vibration, ways to begin to animate the inner ecosystem, to involve the soma in different inputs as a way to redirect the activity of the mind and begin to bring us much more into, you know, what Piaget referred to as sensory motor consciousness, to really come back in time to that very sensory based awareness of ourselves. So a lot of the practices in embodied mindfulness of, you know, witnessing, contacting the self, micro movements, it's really just beginning to kind of allow us to center our energy and begin to expand it into space. So then from there, moving out into the natural environment, which of course, you know, once you open your eyes and are out in space, there's all these different inputs. And so how to practice some of the same resources from the inner world out in space, right? And to also take that into what I call a five-part process of witnessing the environment, contacting the environment, mirroring it, responding, and resting. And each of those five stages, they don't have to necessarily come in that order, but that each of them is kind of a concrete yet very open map for bridging inner and outer. So for example, I might go to the beach, I'm moving around, I'm walking in, and all of a sudden I see a rock that draws my attention. So step one might be is I might contact it, and just by putting my hands on the rock or any other body part, I'm receiving sensory information that I don't get from my visual cortex. And that's one of the things I'd say that differentiates the adult mind from the child mind is the child is always actively exploring, particularly with touch. And just touching that, breathing with that, that creates some input. And then, you know, I give myself a little distance and literally mirror the rock, mirror what I would call its quality. Once again, how do we learn as children? You know, we mirror, or as Marshall McLuhan used to say, they became what they beheld. And throughout time and in history and indigenous cultures, you know, there is that sense of when you become the other, when you take on the qualities and attributes of the other, you participate in its spirit. So mirroring, state of mind of rock, and then I might respond to it. And of course, response, that's where we begin to individuate from what I would call the mirror or merge state. That then, you know, and response could be, I might, you know, a spontaneous sound or a movement, or I might wrap myself around the rock, or, you know, so this relationship begins to take off and diversify. And at any moment, I can come back to rest and resting and, you know, just allowing that lovely space of open presence or open attention just to kind of as a reference point to where am I in myself, and then back out again. Or I might just simply witness the rock. Just breathe, be with myself, and just take in the rock. So all of these, the kind of the, what I'd call the inner experience, and a lot of the technologies I teach are, you know, drawn from these various disciplines, but kind of in, you know, it just really simple doses. So, because I think for me, part of the beauty of being in the environment is stripping away the complexity of the self to get very simple and basic. And and just as kind of like an aside, you know, thinking of some years back, I periodically do individual retreats with people where they come and they're here for 3 days, 4 days, and we just do this process of inner work inside the studio and then out in the environment. And this woman who came to me, just very lovely woman, was really dealing with, you know, at a threshold in her life, her husband was dead. She was on her own. She had, you know, kind of caretaken her parents before they died, before he died. And so much was up. Who am I now? And, you know, so we, and her mind was very active and she was full of all these stories. And, you know, we worked with the stories, we played with the stories. But then I gave her, for example, a simple task when we went out in the environment one of the first times. I said, walk along the path, and when you see something that catches your attention, stop, make contact with yourself, take 3 breaths as you continue to focus on just that much, and then move on. And just kind of keep repeating that score until we meet further down, you know, the way. And she told me after her reflection on that was, my goodness, I go to all these beautiful places. I surround myself in beautiful places. But I didn't realize before how much I'm really not seeing. That I'm just busy, 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 going, and just that much of stopping, 3 breaths, making contact with myself, taking that in, breathing that in, and then moving on. So it became a very powerful metaphor for her of how she could begin to, you know, re-regulate her nervous system and begin to include more periods of that momentary rest in life. So the 5-part process in relationship to the somatic tools, the simple somatic tools, and then how to keep building and in a sense, cross-referencing and combining. You know, for me, that's where a lot of the richness is.
Well, you said something that I just want to repeat, and I'm paraphrasing, but it was so wonderful, how important it is to take those moments, even if we're inside, but particularly outside, sharing with nature, and shedding the busyness, and just present with.
That's kind of it in a nutshell. How do we orient internally, orient in our environment, and continue to go back and forth? So there is no separation at a certain point between our inner and outer life. Quiet, then, is the preparation ground for more complexity and various qualities of energy. So I just want to be really clear that making contact with that inner quietness, that we're not going after just a calm state of mind, but it's the foundation for whatever wants to arise and express, just like the elements. Sometimes the ocean is very calm, and sometimes it's very vibrant and complex and wild, and all of that is within us. And that's how our environment can really continue to mirror back to us all of these different aspects of our being.